Stand by, please.
Hello.
This is a nationwide radio survey. Were you listening to your radio just now?
No, I am not.
Were you listening to your radio just now?
Why, yes, I am.
To what program are you listening, please?
What program?
But there must be some law.
I am the law.
Why, I'm listening to the radio theater.
Of all the peoples of the world, the Americans stand most in fear of a moment's silence. For 82 out of every 100 U.S. citizens, radio provides each day in the year a sure and ever-present escape from their own lives into an ether universe of crackling news, music, costly entertainment, and romantic adventure. In recording U.S. listening habits, often strange and unpredictable, C.E. Hooper has made a profitable business of reporting the public's likes and dislikes to the industry and to the public itself. Hooper ratings, the findings of this nationwide poll, although their accuracy is sometimes questioned, are accepted as convenient yardsticks for sponsors, producers, and performers alike. The survey indicates that the public remains stolidly faithful to the same radio performers year after year. Outstanding example of U.S. listeners' loyalty is Jack Benny, among the first 15 since 1934. To 20 million Americans, listening to the Benny program is a Sunday evening ritual. Consistently high in the public favor, troopers Fibber, McGee, and Molly first brought their homespun humor to the air in 1927.
Joe will attribute my air raid warden's helmet, Molly.
I wouldn't know where to look for it, dearie.
Oh, I know where it is. It's right here in the hall closet.
Oh, no, no.
I gotta straighten out that closet one of these days.
With Americans of all ages, quick-witted Bob Hope has built a solid reputation during the past 12 years as one of radio's top-ranking entertainers. The old comedy art of ventriloquism was brought to a new high level of popularity on the radio by Edgar Bergen, whose assistants, Charlie McCarthy and Mortimer Snerd, have by now overshadowed their creator as radio personalities.
How does the show look for Sunday, Bergen?
Well, I have part of the script here.
Yeah?
I'm explaining sound waves to you.
You are?
Now, when you throw a stone in a pool, what do you see going in all directions?
Frogs?
No, no. You saw waves.
Now, don't tell me what I saw. If they weren't frogs, I hope to croak.
You saw waves.
I not only saw frogs, but I eat them for dinner.
No, no. What do you think, Bill?
Well, we might tighten it up a little.
Yeah, tighten it up, yeah. And then throw it out.
The only commentator regularly rated in the top 15, Walter Winchell dispenses Broadway gossip, last-minute scoops, and his own highly charged personal opinions on the affairs of the world in a breathless mixture for Sunday night listeners. One of the most adult of the top favorites, veteran showman Fred Allen lampoons any subject, even radio itself.
Tell me, Mr. Moody, what are your feelings about the radio?
I don't hold with it, Bub.
Displeases you?
I don't hold with furniture that talks.
Well, you have a radio.
I had one in the hen house.
Yeah?
One day, all the hen's nests would be empty.
Uh-huh.
Next day, every nest would have two eggs into it.
You mean?
The hens were listening to Double or Nothing.
Yeah.
In furnishing the American public its listening fare, the 400 independent stations and the 1,000 network-affiliated stations alike are able to exist for only one reason, the advertising of commercial products. Spending an average $400 million yearly, American industry sponsors more than half of all U.S. radio programming. In putting any program on the air, it is difficult but still necessary to please many people.
Say, instead of that, why don't we have the closet door pushed shut by the cat?
The cat? The sponsor would never go for that. Don't you know he's allergic to cats and dogs and canaries, for that matter?
Well, how about having the girlfriend stick around till midnight and accidentally push the door shut?
Till midnight? Don't be silly. The network wouldn't let us have the guy and his girl alone in the house that late at night. Why, they're not even engaged. I think you'll like our script for the new show, Mr. Dunham.
If you don't mind, I'd like to hear that commercial first.
Certainly, Mr. Dunham, with pleasure. Girls, will you give us the new commercial? And don't forget that tempo.
Consolidated Sardines, America's delight. Have a rich, tangy flavor with plenty of bite. Consolidated Sardines are packed twice as tight. So eat consolidated, can't be consolidated. Treat your stomach right.
That sounds pretty good. But couldn't you work in the name of the product just a little more?
The sponsor exerts virtually complete control over what the public hears, having the power to select the program he wants, to pick the hour for the broadcast, and to eliminate whatever material he dislikes. Yet for every $2 the sponsor spends, the listening public spends $3 on radio sets, repairs, and electric current. And since the airways are considered public property, the Federal Communications Commission is charged with the responsibility of protecting the people's interests. The FCC has the authority to grant or refuse licenses for broadcasting stations based mainly on available wavelengths. And each 3 years, every U.S. station must apply to the commission for license renewal. But throughout its 13-year history, the FCC rejected renewal applications only 4 times, while flagrant cases of transgressions against good taste and program balance continued unchecked. Pointing out radio's failure to live up to its obligation to the public, an FCC report indicates that most U.S. stations heavily overload their airtime with commercials. Guilty of such excessive commercialism are the thousands of programs of recorded music, which consume the bulk of airtime on most small stations, and are often sponsored by as many as 15 different products in an hour's broadcast.
And now let me tell you about McTavish's Skinless Weenies. Mmm, so long, so pink, so flavor-rich, with lots of tasty goodness. Mmm. Ask for McTavish's in the giant economy tin at your favorite grocer's. Tonight or tomorrow, sure. Remember the name, McTavish. And now, friends, for our next number today, bring you...
Depressed by radio's blatant commercialism and appalled by its listening fare is 74-year-old Dr. Lee DeForest, one of radio's inventors.
To the National Association of Broadcasters, New York City. Gentlemen, what have you done to my child, the radio broadcast? He was conceived as a potent instrumentality for culture, fine music, the uplifting of America's mass intelligence. You have debased this child, dressed him in rags of ragtime, tatters of jive and boogie-woogie.
While admitting that there is considerable need for improvement, the industry itself replies that it still sends the public many noteworthy programs, which are too often overlooked in the general criticism of radio. The broadcasters point proudly to their news programs, most popular of any type of radio presentation, allotted 20% of all time on the air. And no other country in the world gives its listeners such complete radio coverage of sports events.
tonight from New York City. What should we do about Germany now? Town meeting tonight!
As an example of radio's commendable features, the broadcasters refer to their discussion programs, where serious controversial subjects are openly debated before a nationwide audience.
First of all, however, Mr. Arnold, you're making me say something that I never dreamed of saying. You're saying that I'm trying under the old leadership to reestablish German industry. My God, I've been living under the Nazis so long that I think I'm a little more allergic to them than you are.
Judge Arnold wants to get in on this here, Judge Arnold.
I don't think, Mr. Lochner, that you realize that you're setting up Germany under the old leadership, but that's the tragedy of it. That is what you're doing.
The public, represented by the studio audience, can have an active voice in the discussion.
My question is directed to Mr. Shirer. Mr. Shirer, how can the world be assured of a peaceful Germany?
I think one of our principal problems now in handling the German question is to carry out ruthlessly and honestly our denazification policy.
The networks are proud that they have enabled radio pioneers like Norman Corwin to present experimental programs in new dramatic forms. The documentary technique has been applied effectively in offering striking broadcasts on subjects of widespread interest. Such documentary coverage from the Library of Congress permitted the public to hear a broadcast at the unsealing of a collection of Lincoln's papers by the foremost Lincoln scholars.
And Mr. Sandberg, in our specific problems of the present time, what do you think would have been Mr. Lincoln's policy and attitude?
We can speculate, guess, surmise on some one dominant quality. I'd say that if today he sat as a counselor of the United Nations, he'd stress above all the quality of patience. Under all shifts of events and changes of circumstance, patience.
Truly great musical talent is available to the U.S. public via radio. Although a relatively small percentage of listeners tune in on classical music, the networks have spent millions of dollars to present artists like Arturo Toscanini, who have been a considerable influence in improving America's musical taste. Among the most articulate of radio's critics is the New York Herald Tribune's John Crosby, whose thoughtful column reflects a tolerant concern for radio's future.
There are more violent extremes of good and bad in radio than any other popular art. The best of it is wonderful, the worst of it is moronic. The trouble is the bad programs outnumber the good ones about 20 to 1. So long as the advertiser runs the show, it'll always be that way. The broadcasters don't own their own souls. There's little hope for radio until they do. Oh, well, radio's only 27 years old. If it doesn't improve within the next 27 years, it'll be time for all of us to get really angry.
Typical of entertainment, which most critics of radio deplore, but the public enjoys, are the many types of audience participation shows.
Now, if you answer this question correctly, madam, you win $50, so try hard. Who was the father of our country?
Could you repeat the question, please?
Why, certainly. Who was the father of our country? What is the capital of the United States?
Washington?
Right. Give that lady those 50 crisp dollar bills.
High in the public favor are the elaborate clam bakes in which studio visitors competing for expensive prizes are encouraged to make fools of themselves.
Listen carefully for the animals now. Many queer sounds I heard on a farm. From the barn comes the sound of contented cows.
Moo!
Quiet a while, Mrs. B. To herald the day in his usual way, you'll hear the old rooster say... They missed him. Still doing his best to outdo the rest, the shaggy old dog yelps. Not to be outdone when he sees the sun, the cute little duck goes... To top off the din, all the pigs chime in.
Oink!
And the clear miss. Well, Mrs. Greenwich, you failed to get him 4 out of 5 times. So, men, who is the better half of the Greenwich family? Congratulations, Mr. Greenwich. The title of the better half of the family goes to you, and along with it, that beautiful big radio phonograph combination. And for being such a good sport, Mrs. Greenwich, we'd like you to accept this brand new electric washing machine.
Most criticized of any type of program on the air today is the soap opera, which eats up 48% of daylight airtime. To all critics, the radio industry replies that 20 million housewives can't be wrong.
Irene, that's the way it is.
But John, how could you deceive me like this? Doesn't our marriage mean anything to you?
It's hard for me to say this, Irene, but Eleanor and I love each other.
You should know, Mrs. Black, that love matters more than anything else. Don't talk to me about love, you vampire.
Irene, we're but straws in the wind. I shall leave you two to talk this out.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Black. There's no use talking. You must give him up. You dare to talk to me like that, you love thief? Get out of my house. I don't give up this easily. And don't forget it.
Will Irene succeed in recapturing John's love? Will John go back to his job and return to his wife and children? For the answer to these human problems, listen in tomorrow, same time, same station. Time marches on.